All right, let's call this meeting a Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Friday, April 16th, 2021. And also that we have a quorum present today, our Senator Bishop, Senator Stevens, Senator Von Imhoff is excused, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Rivak. And Senator Machicki will be joining us shortly. Staffing the committee today is committee aide Betty Tangeman, LIO moderator Nate Williams, and we have Christopher Dickrell online from records. Thank you, as always, to our wonderful staff. Today's agenda consists of six governor appointees for two boards. We will first hear from Melvin Smith, appointee to the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. We'll then take up the five appointees for the Board of Fisheries. Mackenzie Mitchell, Abe Williams, John Wood, Merritt Carlson Van Dort, and John Jensen. And at the very end, we will open up public testimony on all of the nominees. In your packet, you'll find a fact sheet for reference about the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. The board's function is to promote conservation and sustain yield management of fisheries resources and regulates, controls entry into commercial fisheries. Melvin Smith was appointed in February of this year, and if confirmed, he will serve a four-year term. Commissioner Smith, if you are with us, it looks like you are, please, sir, place yourself on the record. Give us a 2 to 3 minute introduction about yourself, little background, and why you're interested in serving. Begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Chair Rivak. Through the chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Melvin Smith, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself to your committee. I am honored that the governor has appointed me to serve on the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and I'm looking to get the support of this committee for this position. Here's a little bit of history about myself now. I was born and raised in a small Aleutian village of False Pass. My siblings and I have been fishing since the age of six. At a young age, my father taught me to operate the vessel, set gear, navigate Alaska waters, and be a commercial fisherman. For more than 26 years, I've owned several limited entry permits and fishing vessels. As it is customary in this industry, like my father before me, I passed on my permits and fishing operations to my son. The passing of the torch is critical to address the graying of the fleet and provide training and economic stability to the next generation of fishermen and women. As they say, once a fisherman, always a fisherman, and I continue to have a thorough knowledge of the areas I fish to this day. I operated my permits and gear in the Alaska Peninsula, Bering Sea, and the Gulf of Alaska. More recently, at the Aleut Corporation, as a manager for more than 23 years in their natural resource department, I was responsible for the corporation's land holdings, natural resources, and commercial real estate. I have many years working with various boards, committees, and their employees in my past positions as a corporate manager. The skills that I have acquired working in a corporate environment will serve me well in my capacity as a commissioner of the CFEC. My goal is to utilize my many years of management and knowledge of the fishing industry to keep the CFEC running smoothly, and also to continue to operate to ensure that commercial fishing remains a viable industry for all of Alaska. I have been in contact with CFEC Commissioner Kelly, and I have connected with CFEC staff and the executive director to be briefed on current matters relevant to CFEC. I understand my duties, but fully admit there is much to learn regarding the policy and procedures of the CFEC. My experience and team player skills will keep important matters from slipping through the cracks. I can assure you that I'm ready to hit the deck running. My goal is to utilize my years of fishing management experience and knowledge of the fishing industry to keep CFEC running smoothly. Grace, my wife of 42 years, and I are proud parents and grandparents of the next generation of Alaskans. I look forward to giving back to an industry that helped form who I am and help to feed my family. Thank you for your time, and I do hope that this committee will support me as the governor's choice for this appointment as commissioner of CFEC. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from committee members? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir, for being with us. We appreciate your willingness to serve. I was interested in your perspective on fisheries around the state and whether there are fisheries that you think today are inefficiently prosecuted or where they're economically the numbers are off such that there might be a problem with the fishery.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Through the chair, yes, I do believe there are some distressed fisheries. The Cook Inlet Set Net fishery, for example, which, you know, there's hopefully that, you know, Senate Bill 29, which is Machiki's, is the sponsor, you know, and as of right now, I've only been on the job for 6 weeks, and I would say, as I, you know, if confirmed, I believe there's some other fisheries that we need to look at, and the staff here at CFEC is very good at looking into those numbers, and as I get more acclimated to the job, I think there's, you know, there'll be research and more to come on those fisheries.
Thank you. Other questions?
Sure.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Smith, another question, I guess, about the commission's ability to do the work. I think with your appointment, this may be the first time the commission hasn't had an attorney member, maybe ever, certainly in a very long time. And I know the commission has a quasi-judicial role. Do you have concerns about that, and what are you thinking about not having a lawyer on the commission?
Thank you, Senator Keel. Through the chair, well, the CFEC itself has an in-house legal, and we also have an attorney general. So I feel, and I am not a lawyer, as you mentioned, but I think with the staff that we do have, with researchers and economists and lawyers in-house, that we should be fine. They are very knowledgeable on all the issues and whatnot that CFEC has to go through.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you, Commissioner Smith. Thank you for your willingness to serve as well. We're now going to move on to the Board of Fisheries, whose function is conservation and development of fishery resources. This involves setting seasons, bag limits, methods, and means for the state subsistence, commercial sport, guided sport, and personal use fisheries, and it also involves setting policy and direction for the management of the state's fishery resources. The board is charged with making allocative decisions, and the department is responsible for management based on those decisions. Up first is Mackenzie Mitchell from Fairbanks. Her appointment began on July 1st, 2020, and if confirmed, her term would expire June 30th, 2023. Ms. Mitchell, if you are ready, please place yourself on the record. Give us a brief 2 to 3 minute introduction, a little personal background, and tell us why you want to serve here on the Board of Fish. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much for having me here today. I feel pretty honored to be sitting in front of you with this opportunity. A little bit about myself. My name is Mackenzie Mitchell. I'm calling in today from Fairbanks, Alaska, where I reside. I was born and raised in Northern California, and my parents enjoyed the outdoors and exposed me to much camping and hiking and hunting and fishing as a kid. For some reason, the hunting and fishing really stuck, and at the age of 20 and after traveling the country, I bought a one-way plane ticket to Alaska. When I arrived in Anchorage, I stayed at a youth hostel and took the city bus to a city library where I Googled hunting and fishing operations. I called various operations and told them that I would work for room and board and industry experience. A lodge in Kodiak accepted my offer, and I flew to Kodiak the next day and was employed by this hunting and fishing lodge for several years. And in that time, I acquired my captain's license, sport fishing guide license, and assistant big game hunting license. And I started to make a wage after a few years as well. I worked full-length seasons at this lodge, which in Kodiak and for us began in April for spring bear hunting, and then summer fishing, fall bear hunting, and deer season ending for us in November to December. And then would travel to the lower 48 to promote the company at hunting and fishing expositions such as Safari Club International. I really had found my calling with working in the hunting and fishing industry, but I still had always wanted to have a college degree, so I moved to Fairbanks and enrolled at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I majored in economics and built an interdisciplinary minor I titled Wilderness Leadership and Guiding Services. I continued fishing work in the summer and was introduced to interior game hunting of sheep and moose by working for a couple interior outfitters. I wanted to graduate very quickly, but in one of my last years at UAS for my undergraduate degree, I was introduced to resource economics. With hunting and fishing being what I loved, the economics behind resource management and resource consumption was incredibly interesting, and I felt compelled to continue on to obtain my graduate degree in resource and applied economics, where I focused the entirety of my research on fisheries. By definition, resource economics deals with the supply, demand, and allocation of Earth's natural resources. A graduate degree in resource economics prepares students to use economic tools to evaluate the allocation and the utilization of resources to achieve optimal environmental and social benefits. It also helps students to understand the market and values associated with the environment and resource use, as well as resource management decisions. I am fascinated by this economic way of thinking and its application to natural resources. I feel fortunate to live in Alaska, a state with an incredible natural resource endowment, as well as a state that is largely resource dependent. It makes for great economics and a great lifestyle. A large part of my education centered on economic methods for valuing non-market goods. This is important when applied to resources because many resources provide utility but do not necessarily have direct or observable market prices. Simply following monetary flows to determine the economic importance of a natural resource will understate its true value every time. Of equal importance, in my opinion, is the process at which natural resources are allocated for consumptive purposes. I believe that allocative decisions intended to optimize social and environmental welfare over time require us to evaluate the resource and the user group by assigning values that may not be directly observable. I believe that the commercial fishery in the state of Alaska is incredibly important and has incredibly important economic opportunity for reasons spanning from maintaining generational heritage of families and communities across Alaska, as well as its incredibly powerful position as a leading supplier of fish to a world market. I also believe that the subsistence and personal use fisheries in the state of Alaska is incredibly important because the health of an economy and the strength of a state is greatly supported by the well-being of its people and the ability of people to feel unified under tradition and belief systems. I believe the sport fishery is incredibly important for reasons spanning from its significant growth over the last two decades, as well as its influence in helping to maintain Alaska's status as a premier recreation travel destination. I currently teach economics and recreation management at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, as well as work as a ground instructor and instrument ground instructor at a flight school in Fairbanks. I also continue to work seasonally as a hunting and fishing guide. I am incredibly passionate about Alaska, Alaska's resources, and my Alaskan lifestyle, and I would be honored to serve as a member of the Alaska Board of Fisheries, and I understand the responsibility associated with helping to manage one of the best managed fisheries in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mackenzie. We have a question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Appreciate your academic background. As a member of the board, how do you balance the issues of sports fishing, commercial fishing, subsistence? How do you balance all those very controversial issues?
Through the chair, Senator, I do it on a case-by-case basis. Geographically speaking, user group speaking, every situation is going to be different, and every situation deserves to have to be given due diligence and time dedicated to it to determine the appropriate allocated use of that resource.
You know, that doesn't say a whole lot. I mean, I these are quite conflicting issues. I mean, do you put one above the other? Do you give them all a fair shot? I mean, just explain a little bit more, if you will.
Certainly. Obviously, subsistence has a state priority in the state and is incredibly important. And so that will take a beginning. That will be one of the beginning things that starts to get looked at in determining the allocated purpose for that state. But it's also important to understand how remote and rural some of the areas within the state are. So dealing with subsistence issues in probably a more heavily populated area that has more access and the dependency of subsistence users in extremely remote areas, for example, in western Alaska along the Yukon River, is going to be something that you have to take into consideration when making allocative decisions. The health of the resource is going to play a huge part. Obviously, it's well understood that in areas like Upper Cook Inlet, you see more of a, you know, I guess a competition of user groups when it looks at commercial and sport use, whereas other areas of the state are obviously going to require a completely different focus. And ultimately, there needs to be a knowledge and time committed to understanding the importance by user group for those species and then trying to allocate with the purpose of the board, which is to utilize, develop, and conserve the resource. Does that help to answer the question, Senator?
Yes, thank you, Mackenzie, and good luck to you. It's a very complex issue, and I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay, it looks like the committee has no further questions. Thank you, Mackenzie. We're going to move on to Abe Williams from Anchorage. Abe's appointment began on July 1st, 2020, and his term expires June 30th, 2023. Mr. Williams, if you could place yourself up on the record, and please try to keep it to 2 to 3 minutes. We're going to be already just a hair late to end this committee. So, for everybody coming after Mr. Williams, please keep in mind we're trying to get everybody out of here as close to on time as possible to respect everybody's schedule. So, quick introduction, personal background, and tell us why you're interested in serving. Mr. Williams, please proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you, Chairman Reback and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Abe Williams. I'm a lifelong Alaskan resident, born and raised in King Salmon, Alaska, where I've lived for 39 years. I'm currently a resident of Anchorage, Alaska, and have been for the past 11 years. My past experiences include 15 years as the president of the Pavic Native Corporation. I served on the Bristol Bay Borough Assembly for 3 years. I served on the Bristol Bay Borough School Board for 6 years, and I've served on the NACDC-Quijac Advisory Committee for 9 years, 6 of those years as the co-chair. I served on the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association for 3 years, and I'm a member of the NACDC Village Tribe. Currently, I'm the Director of Regional Affairs at the Pebble Limited Partnership. I own and operate a Bristol Bay commercial fishing operation along with my 3 sons. I have been involved in the fishery for more than 39 years and continue to do so as a fourth-generation commercial fisherman. I own and operate a business in NACDC, Alaska that services the commercial fishing industry with the help of my family. My family and I enjoy the outdoors, share a love for Alaska and the plentiful resources it has to offer. And I'd just like to take this time to ask you guys for your support as the governor appointed me to this Board of Fish, and I'm very honored. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Committee questions? Well, I have a question, Mr. Williams. So we've received a number of letters from folks concerned about a potential conflict of interest or maybe more of a influence in your objectivity were some questions related to that regarding the Pebble partnership. And if you wouldn't mind, could you just speak to that a little bit?
Yes, I'm very aware of the concern from some of my constituents in the fishery and folks abroad. I've participated in the fishery for more than 39 years. I subsistence fish next to my grandmother. I've sports fished next to some of my closest friends and family. To discredit me as a fair and ethical person because of a position I hold, I think is certainly not fair, and it's one that wouldn't describe me if you had met me and spent a little bit of time with me. I take every position that I've held in the past and everything that I do in my future as very important to how it defines me and my moral compass. So I respect those that see it the opposite, but I would I think it would be hard pressed to find a moment where the Board of Fisheries here would be dealing with proposals or anything that would concern the project, the Pebble project, and how it moves forward, if in fact it does. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Williams, you speaking to that. We have not heard too many complaints in your service, so thank you for taking the time to speak to that. Other questions? Senator Michicki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Williams. If you've watched me before for any of these board discussions, I bring things on the table that folks have brought forward to give you an opportunity to fairly answer. So there's a couple things, some pretty heavy hitters in the region that are not in support of your confirmation. I'm sure you've seen that letter. And two of the most common things I'm hearing, and I'm not going to talk about the Pebble mine because I think that's sort of a beside the point thing. One of them is that Bristol Bay has always sort of had a regional advocate. You're regarded as an out of region advocate. And the second thing is the opposition for many in the fleet that you seem to represent the wealthier fishermen, large boat, D boats, your desire to move beyond 32 foot. So those are the two things I'd like to hear from you about. There's obviously some relationship problems in region. Maybe you can describe that and talk about it a little bit. And then the concern for the more traditional local 32 foot fishermen that are concerned that they'll no longer be represented adequately.
Yes, sir. And through the chair, thanks for that question. I recognize that there are those in the region that certainly don't support me, and some of them have to do with the dual permit proposals that I put forward in the past. I never supported or advanced any conversations in the lengthening of a 32-foot boat, although I do feel that there is certainly some merit there. Bristol Bay is limited to a 32-foot long boat. We see them growing wider and it maintaining a certain length as we look to advance the fishery in more of a way that is meaningful in regard to the quality of the product that we're fishing and harvesting from Bristol Bay. So with that said, my support that is often seen or is, I guess, perceived as supporting those from the wealthier side of the fishery. I myself started in the fishery in a very moderate way. I had to lease permits. I I didn't have a permit handed down to me from my family, which would have been beneficial. But I bought my own permit. I bought my own boats. I fished out of open skiffs. But I consistently was a top producer in the fisheries, and that helped me become who I am today in the fishery. And some folks may see that the way I see it, but others may see it as a something that's not necessarily respectful of them. Having said that, my support around the dual permit stacking and efforts for that come from just the sheer participation in the fishery itself. And so when I look around, I have 1,825 colleagues that have permits that fish next to me. And back in the early 2000s, the state of Alaska put together a task force to assess the fishery. We were receiving about 40 cents a pound for our product. The quality wasn't necessarily there, and people were bailing out of the fishery and selling their permits for about $25,000 a copy. While that was happening, we watched an out-migration of permits from the region. People couldn't afford to keep their permits and invest in the fishery, so they chose to sell those. And it's certainly one of the reasons why we see a local ownership at an all-time low, bouncing back and forth between 16 and 17%, which is, to me, a big problem. So with that said, I think that a dual permit ship offered credibility to a self-performed buyback and also clean the fishery up a little bit to meet the Department of Fish and Game's optimum number, and gives us the ability to be a little more resourceful and at the same time profitable in a fishery that fluctuates quite drastically.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Other questions? Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Williams. I appreciate your comment that you don't believe there's anything that the board would deal with that that would affect Pebble. But could you sort of help us understand what your position is as a director of Pebble Partnership, just so we understand that?
Yes. So my position as the director of regional affairs is I engage with stakeholders in the region, fishermen as well, and spend time with them learning a little bit about the concerns that they may have. And I'm just a mostly a conduit between the project and understanding concerns and communities throughout the region.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Other questions? All right. We have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Williams, for your willingness to be here to testify, your willingness to serve. Next, we will move on to John Wood from Willow. He was appointed May 24th, 2019. And his term is set to expire June 30th, 2021. Mr. Williams, if you could please place yourself on the record, give us a brief introduction, a little personal background. Tell us why you want to serve.
Thank you, Senator. I presume you meant Mr. Wood, so I'm going to take the mic and run with it. I had prepared written remarks to read from, but I'll just send those along. It's tough putting 49 years into 2 or 3 minutes, but I'll give it my best shot. Starting off in 2013 is when the Board of Fisheries experiences initiated, and it's when I accompanied Senator Dunleavy as staff and handled the fisheries issues for his office. As such, I not only attended the pertinent BOF sessions, but also took it upon myself to physically travel on my own time and nickel to actually visit the fishing sites to speak directly with several Eastside set netters, as well as tour two processing facilities to get their perspective. As directed by the Senator, my emphasis during this was focused entirely on the health of our fish stocks and ensuring the best chance for them to flourish and return to their historical levels in both size and numbers throughout all species. That remains my emphasis to this day, and I approach this recent Board of Fisheries cycle with that as my overriding goal. I continued reaching out to all stakeholders after my initial appointment, and again, on my own nickel and own time, I attended the North Pacific Council Salmon Committee in Houma, and while there, I met with several seine netters as well as a Houma processor. On my return trip home, I stayed an extra day and met with Eastside set netters Chris Every, Gary Hollier, and Ken Coleman about their fishery and the legislative efforts underway to provide a buyout system that was being moved by Senator Michikee. Their arguments were persuasive, and at the Board of Fish meeting, I spoke out strongly in favor and voted for their proposal, which provided backfill provisions, which was a key component of that buyback program. Also met with Roland Maugh and others at the UCEDA headquarters, where I was given my first opportunity to read the federal Ninth Circuit lawsuit, as well as listen to their concerns being considered in the upcoming cycle. Not unexpectedly, this last cycle dealt with many contentious issues with strongly held beliefs and convictions by all stakeholders. Nobody who has participated in past meetings would have predicted what occurred. Stakeholders who had been bitter rivals and barely spoke with each other actually opened dialogue and negotiated approaches that each could live by and preserve their lifestyle. Who would have thought that CURSA, KRPG, and Eastside Setnets would actually work together to create a plan for that area? They came extremely close to a total agreement, but we fell short on one or two of the key issues. Nonetheless, the dialogue was open, and I hope that it continues into the next round. Equally amazing is that the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife Commission and the Northern Set Netters did the same, and together succeeded in strengthening the pair restrictions while making them fairer. Additionally, at the Kodiak meeting, as it was winding down, the advocacy group, the Kodiak Salmon Work Group, initiated their RC-131, which reached out to create a study on all fisheries from Unimak Island to Prince William Sound, including Cook Inlet, patterned on a highly successful WASP study conducted in western Alaska. This Kodiak RC-131 was subsequently supported by an assembly resolution of the Mat-Su Borough Assembly. There are those that wish to perpetuate the fish wars for whatever reason, whether that be political, economic, or simply harboring old grudges. My approach was and will continue to be, first, listen and learn from all perspectives. Second, act as a catalyst to bring competing parties together in a constructive setting and then step back and encourage them to work out their differences, as nobody knows their issue better than them. Obviously, just as each of you are in your legislative role prepared to make a decision, the parties will be much better served and the result better accepted and honored if it is their own plan that they created. I went through three hearings last year before COVID intervened. I would ask that those be made part of the record as well, and I ask for your support. I can be reached at 907-354-0775 or email at jmkwood@mpaonline. I'll send the written remarks on so that you have a total breadth of my background, experience, and volunteer efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Do we have questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wood, I think we talked maybe last year about the contract for the governor. Is that contract still in effect?
Yes, it is, Senator. It does not involve anything related to fisheries, but yes, it is still in effect.
Okay, and are you currently doing work under that contract?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Have you had the chance to talk fish with the governor lately?
No, not really.
Appreciate that. Mr. Wood, I guess a question on a different tack. There's a little bit of a concern that's been expressed to me about sort of representation on the board from a statewide perspective. I think with the exception of a Fairbanks member and a Petersburg member, you could draw about a 45, maybe 50-mile diameter circle and catch every other member at present. How adequately do you think the board is reflecting the interests of all Alaskans right now?
Well, yeah, you're asking a question on geographics. And my understanding is that's covered pretty explicitly in the statute itself. But to answer your question, you know, if you're looking for somebody that has experience and contact with, for instance, Anchorage, I spent 32 years down there sitting on assembly, et cetera. I know Anchorage as well as I know the valley. And I don't see where that's a bad thing for the Board of Fisheries to have available to it.
remarkable take. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wood, could you give me a little background? I know you've got some experience on the Tanana and the Yukon Rivers as far as knowing different folks up and down the river, and I asked this question a year ago, and it's still the same question. And, you know through your contacts how impacted we are by it's worse today, the question, than it was a year ago, the lack of no fish and no fish for dogs and no fish for human consumption, especially as that fall run affected us this last year. And I just like your to keep an open mind to help us any way you can up there.
It goes beyond an open mind, Senator Bishop. Pat Moore, whom we both have as mutual friend, and I discussed this at length several times in the last year. The situation, unfortunately, you're absolutely right, it's gotten worse rather than better. And, yes, I will do whatever I can to see that those returns are back up to the numbers that they should be, and that the users have a reliable and consistent source for their fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, hello, John. It's good to hear your voice. And I had a couple things I wanted to ask. This is kind of like philosophical more so than anything else. And I think you've done a good job on reaching out to learn about the fisheries. I do dream of a board one day that's filled with experienced fishery folks, and maybe we'll get there at some point. Probably not going to be today. But one of the things I want to talk to you about, John, is we have a tendency, so I'll use Cook Inlet as an example. Whole bunch of fisheries catch Cook Inlet fish before they get to Cook Inlet. And then we fight amongst the scraps as neighbors that finally make it to their home waters. And I feel like actions of the board in the last couple of years have sort of exacerbated the little scrap fight at the end. When is the board going to look at a cradle-to-grave approach on the life cycle of fish and understand the impacts from fry to maturity, where those fish are going, how they're coming back, and a more comprehensive look versus pitting neighbor against neighbor, which I got to say the board's been very good at for a very long time?
Let me respond this way if I can. I would love to have a cradle-to-grave approach, Senator. The problem is the Board of Fish only has jurisdiction on the cradle and the grave and not what happens in between out in the deep water. And therein, in my opinion, lies a lot of the problem, in that the numbers that we're seeing are controlled with what happens out there, and we have very, very little data on it. And I would suggest, I met with the chief scientist of NOAA to address this issue because he had research dollars available to spend on doing some research out in the blue water and only needed some slight changes at the federal level to authorize that. And it never went anywhere. I contacted Senator Sullivan's office as well. So perhaps some of you folks could use some of your influence to join in on that, and let's get some data from out there. The goal of the board should not be, and I don't think it is to divide the parties that have neighbors fighting neighbors. But the fact of the matter is when you make an allocation question in a mixed-stock fishery, such as what you described in the Cook Inlet, it's pretty saturated already. And you're going to be, by allocating, saying that one fisherman is going to get the fish and the other fisherman will not. Now, where your point has extreme validity is that there is a lot of lost opportunity out in that inlet with fish not being harvested. And to address that, it's a tricky, tricky, challenging question. It's a balancing of interest. I don't know that I have a answer that would answer all of them, but I'll continue to work to bring the parties together, because you folks that are doing the fishing, and I include you in there, you've got a permit yourself. You know that fishery inside and out. And come up with a solution where everybody benefits and the fish are returned in the numbers that need to be returned to. My primary focus is to get the fish back into the streams in sufficient numbers to provide a consistent harvest.
Yeah, just to follow up.
Yeah, follow up.
Yeah, I think everyone knows that I'm a drifter in Cook Inlet. I think they also know I have five other boats that are used for sport fishing. My question really wasn't about allocation. It was about a more comprehensive approach. And not all of the fisheries impacts are related to blue water. And I think that's a lost opportunity. I mean, it's Cook Inlet today. Like I said, I enjoy fishing of all types. Tomorrow it'll be Bristol Bay. The construction of lodges that have occurred, of course, we have record returns, but one day that'll be challenged. That's a guarantee in fisheries, and you'll have the same sort of situation. So without a more comprehensive approach, eventually as the state grows, we will be in this situation with every fishery. So I just encourage that. And we can talk more offline. I think it's going to be, I mean, you guys did some action. I'll ask another member about the fishing off the Cape, and I'm sure the senator next to me might ask about that a little bit. And I just think it's the kind of thing where we really need to think about not pitting end-of-the-line neighbor against neighbor and a more comprehensive philosophy.
Thank you, and I'm always open to hearing different ideas on that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, I don't see any. Mr. Wood, thanks for your willingness to serve. Next, we have... next, we'll hear from Merritt Carlson Van Dort from Anchorage, who was appointed May 1st, 2019, with a term set to expire June 30th, 2021. Please, Ms. Carlson Van Dort, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Tonight, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Marit Carlson Van Dort. I'm a born and raised in Alaska and a Subtac from the Southern Alaska Peninsula. I was raised between Juneau in the winters, where I attended school, and Chignik Bay, where I spent my summers with a large extended family and generational fishermen. I currently reside in Anchorage, where I moved in 2015, but prior to 2015, my entire life experience has been living in coastal Alaska off the road system. You're all very familiar with life in Juneau, but Chignik is a small village with a long history of fisheries. And over the years, various fisheries have come and gone, but the village now is supported almost entirely by sockeye salmon, or it was. In the very early 90s, when I was about 14, I was offered a job on my grandfather's seine boat, where I spent the next 13 or so summers seining for salmon in that fishery, as many generations have before me. I've also been a lifelong subsistence user. And it's these experiences that inspired my early interest in ecology and science of the natural world. After high school, I attended the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Conservation Biology. And while Wisconsin may not be known as a hotbed for salmon research, the university has pioneered the science of limnology and fish ecology in freshwater systems in North America. And it was primarily in that coursework that I concentrated a lot of my studies, and I was very interested in limnology particularly. Upon returning to Alaska, I continued my education at the University of Alaska Southeast in fisheries science, where I was also very interested in large population dynamics of Salmonid species, looking at statistics and trends and developing and how we develop models to try and predict what salmon populations will do. And I also studied in the Masters of Arts and Teaching program, where I studied secondary education with a math science emphasis, and through which I completed my student teaching practicum at Juneau Douglas High School, where I taught physical science and oceanography for a year. Over the years, how Alaska protects and manages and uses the many resources we've been blessed with has remained central to my personal and professional interests. Many of you know I'm a former legislative staffer, spending many hours assigned to the work of this committee in particular, as well as a former legislative liaison to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. More recently, I shifted to the private sector, but I continue to work in public and government affairs in areas associated with state and federal regulation, environmental policy, permitting, development, and community outreach and engagement. I'm currently employed as the president and CEO of Far West Inc., which is the Alaska Native Village Corporation for Chignik Bay, formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The Far West Board of Directors recognizes that managing Far West lands for subsistence and cultural resources remains the very highest priority and best use of the corporation's lands. As such, aside from a lease to permit guided bear hunting on Far West lands and very limited rentals of a couple of apartments in the village, the corporation has no other business interests in the village and derives no revenue whatsoever from fisheries. Far West shareholders primarily reside in South Central Alaska and in Kodiak, the two locations which the corporation has been alternating hosting its annual shareholders meetings for the last several years. My interest in serving on the Board of Fisheries came about because of what seems to me to be very significant changes and dramatic shifts in many of Alaska's fish populations and their behaviors in recent years. I am very interested in trying to understand what is causing these changes and ensuring that fisheries management policies are appropriately responsive to what is being observed locally and reflected in the scientific data. Most importantly, we need to be managing for long-term sustainability. And to me, what that means is that first and foremost, sufficient numbers of fish are returning and reproducing to renew wild populations. Secondly, that we're managing for a sustainable surplus, primarily based on MSY principles, maximum sustainable yield principles, and that Alaska's subsistence use priority is being upheld. It is incredibly important to me that fish resources are available to Alaskans as a reliable, affordable, and accessible source of healthy protein to support our bodies and feed our families. I support the Alaska commercial fishing industry and recognize it is very important to Alaska's economy and also an important part of bolstering Alaska's food security and making fish available to Alaskans for whatever reason may or may not be able or willing to access the resource for themselves, certainly not to mention feeding the world with healthy wild fish. I fully recognize the value and importance of Alaska's subsistence, commercial, sport fishing, and personal use fisheries to the culture and economies of Alaskan communities, most especially our rural communities. Mr. Chairman, my appointment, I know, has sparked controversy, which I think has been fueled by some misrepresentations and falsehoods that have been distributed. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address some of these.
Yes, please continue.
Thank you. So first, I'd like to address the assertion that I currently occupy a comfish seat. I was appointed in the spring of 2019 to fill the seat that was occupied by Orville Huntington when he made the move to the Board of Game. At that time, I was unanimously confirmed by the legislature to complete the remaining 2 years of his 3-year term. And although there are no designated seats per se on the Board of Fisheries, he was recognized as sort of a quote-unquote subsistence seat. The comfish seats were occupied by John Jensen, Fritz Johnson, and Jared Godfrey. And the sport fish seats were occupied by Reed Morisky, Israel Payton, and John Wood, who you just heard from. The board that is before you now for consideration would maintain my position as so-called subsistence seat. Second, is the assertion that I did not provide valid justification for my vote and that I came to the Upper Cook Inlet meeting with my mind made up. The truth is that I provided plenty of justification for the proposals I supported and didn't support. And it's inaccurate to claim, I think, that I only supported sport fish proposals over comfish. I did not come to that meeting with my mind made up. I asked questions of both the department staff and the public, and I worked hard on attempting to brokering a compromise between commercial and sport fish interests on a proposal addressing late-run Kenai king salmon conservation concerns. And I think this is precisely the process and type of communication that stakeholders value and board members. Third, the assertion that commercial fishermen have expressed frustration that I don't engage, quite frankly, it surprised me. I've been available, I think, on many occasions and have been invited and met with UFA leadership and members. I was invited and participated on a panel that was hosted by UFA last fall during Virtual Fish Expo. I've met in person with members of the Kodiak Salmon Working Group. I've met with Cook Inlet drift fishermen and set netters. I've met with sport fish guides and conservation groups from Lower Cook Inlet to the Matsu Valley. I've met with Southeast Alaska commercial fishing interests, Chinook area stakeholders, and hatchery representatives. I've met with folks from Alaska Native regional and village corporations and tribes. I've spoken on the phone to people. I've been responsive to emails. And I've done my very, very best to be available to Alaskans because They deserve no less. There was also an assertion that I vote strictly for Chignik fishermen, and that there are shareholders and for shareholders and directors of the Chignik Village Corporation. The corporation does have shareholders that are Chignik permit holders, but there are also shareholders that are Kodiak permit holders. The board made a very difficult and unpopular allocation decision to decrease the time and allocation percentage allowed to the Kodiak fleet in their prosecution of a very specific intercept fishery on a struggling Chignik run that has failed to meet minimum escapement goals for the last 3 years. Fifth, you know, there's zero evidence to substantiate a claim that I colluded with family members. This has also included some of the talking points that have been circulating. I want to be upfront about this. I did not work with a cousin to submit proposals to the board. The proposals were submitted long before I had any interest in being appointed to the board, and I never worked with this cousin or any other in crafting any proposals. There was also an accusation that I colluded with my uncle to transfer his permit to alleviate a conflict of interest prior to the Kodiak meeting. I had no knowledge of my uncle's transfer of his same permit. He submitted a sworn affidavit to the committee affirming these facts. And when drafting my ethics disclosures, I've always checked with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission website to ensure that my ethics disclosures were accurate. I disclosed that he held a permit in two of the prior meetings in which I had participated. I also disclosed at the Kodiak meeting that he had held a Chignik permit. And I further disclosed on the record prior to deliberations that a first cousin had submitted some proposals that were before the board. I consulted with the Department of Law and the board chair and the ethics as the ethics supervisor on all of these disclosures, and I was advised that there was no conflict of interest under the Executive Ethics Act, and I was allowed to participate. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, during board discussions, I did use the word we in referring to the loss of two processing plants that occurred in the community of Chignik in the last few years. That was a mistake, simply put. But somehow I think this misstatement is being upheld as proof that I didn't draft my own comments. And I did. I worked really hard and late into the night drafting my comments and reviewing department data related to the proposals. I did work with the Chignik stakeholder group to make sure that the intent and the effect of the proposed policy change was accurate. But this was done after I had heard staff report, public testimony, and information provided during the committee of the whole process. I think that's the job of a board member. And the reality is that any policy or management plan changes are board decisions. And, you know, just to conclude, we all have, I think, deep and meaningful ties throughout Alaska, and that shouldn't preclude qualified candidates from consideration, whether that's me or anybody else. We all come from somewhere, and I believe that all of the appointees care deeply about our fisheries. I'm very honored to be the first woman and the first Alaska Native woman to ever be elected as chairman of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Alaska's fish resources mean a great deal to me. Alaska's fish have given a lot to me, and I would like to give back by continuing to serve on this board. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the latitude. Thank you for allowing me this time, and I will do my best to answer committee questions. Kiana.
Yeah, thank you, Merritt, and I do appreciate you reaching out to our office to ask for some additional time, given all the feedback that we've had. I do appreciate that. Thanks, as always, for your willingness to serve. I don't see any questions. Oh, we do have questions. All right, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you. Merritt, it's good to hear from you. Of course, I'm very familiar with Chignik and the very large Carlson clan, the family out there. Of course, many of them were in Kodiak and had actually several Carlsons as students. So anyway, great to hear from you, but could you, do you have any further comments to make on the difficult decisions you're faced on the board, the balancing the competitive uses of various groups? Can you help us understand what you face in trying to decide how to balance those groups out?
Sure. Thank you for the question, Senator Stevens. I'm not sure if you having my relatives as students is going to help me or not in this in this hearing.
No, it helps, believe me.
I'm kidding. But, you know, simply put, those decisions are incredibly difficult. So the way I tend to approach the decision-making process is, number one, is there a conservation issue? And at the end of the day, I mean, or at the beginning of the day, the fish come first, period. So, you know, secondly, as I mentioned, we're looking to be able to sustain a harvestable surplus, and there is that subsistence priority in the law. So that is the sort of the second lens with which I approach that. And then, you know, everything else comes after that. And when we're evaluating, when I'm evaluating some of these very difficult allocative decisions, I'm trying to look at the totality of the issues. So I'm trying to take into account, are there other alternatives for folks to harvest fish? Are there other fisheries available? You know, what other opportunities, economic opportunities, job opportunities might there be in the locations that people are living in? And then, you know, certainly the science drives a lot of this as well. So is there the science to support some of the claims or assertions being made? I think one of the very valuable areas that we're supplied with information is on genetic data and historic tagging studies. So these are some of the things that I'm very interested in looking at and trying to understand, as well as trends over time when making these types of difficult decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Crossman-Dort, thanks for being with us. It was good talking to you earlier. I want to ask sort of it's partially a follow-up on Senator Stevens' question, partially a follow-up on the question of a previous nominee, and it really does have to go to the question of whether all the facets of Alaska's fishing community believe that they have an open ear and an advocate at the board. And I think you have seen, as folks have shared with you, the support and opposition coming in, some serious concerns about that, both from user types and regions of the state. And we chatted about this a little bit previously. I mean, I guess the previous answer to the question left me really worried, right? It was sort of, well, don't worry, I know Anchorage and the Mat-Su, so I've got everything. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your role and why there's so much concern coming in about your appointment.
Through the chair, Senator Peel. So I think that there's a lot of, I understand the concern about balance, and I understand the concern about geographical representation. The way I approach this is that I consider it the job of the board members to represent the interests of the fish and of all Alaskans. Personally, my experience is most strong in subsistence and in commercial fishing. I have less experience in sport fish and personal use. But I think that there's a difference between representing a specific interest and having that experience represented at the board level. So I think you've got amongst this board a pretty good representation of commercial sport fish and subsistence use experience. And I don't believe that we should be representing any specific interest as a member of the board. Now, to speak to the geographic concern that you have, I can appreciate where you're coming from with that. But again, I think it needs to go one level deeper, not just currently where we're residing today, but where our life experience has been. And in my case, it's largely in Southeast and Southwest Alaska. 35 of my 43 years have been spent there. And then I think you need to look deeper into the background of each of the board members to determine where their life experience lies, and not just where they're physically residing today.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So um, I I appreciate that, and I know there haven't been that many board meetings since you've been serving. The concern that is coming in, I guess, has to do with how folks are perceiving the ear and the advocacy. Can you I mean, I delve into some of the specifics on those issues?
Perceiving the something in the advocacy. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, the open ear, the being listened to, and then the advocacy from the board member.
Right. I don't know how to explain it any more than I have, Senator. I've done my very best to be available to people that want to meet with me. I have tried to reach out to people that I would like additional information from, especially as we get into the meetings and proposals come before me and we start to dig into them more and more. I think that having that representation of that local knowledge and that traditional knowledge is invaluable because nobody knows the resource better than the people that live with them on a daily basis. So I think that that's very important. I can say that I have tried to be very objective in how I approach evaluating these the various proposals in the cycle that I or in the year that I was actually taking action. I think there was 300 plus proposals that we were looking at, and as I've already described as well, I think that the science is going to drive a lot of my decisions, or at least that's certainly how I approach it. Beyond that, I don't know what else I can say.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is kind of an offbeat question, but I think it's an important one for the Board of Fish, which is probably the only job that has more pressure on it than serving in the legislature in the state of Alaska. But maybe it's equal, I don't know. So the question I have, you talked about that no board member should have a specific interest on representing a group, but we know that's not true. That's not how it works. And we know over time people get sort of put into a slot the way they typically are going to vote. There have been some board members that you don't know kind of in advance which way they're going to lean. I think Mr. Godfrey is that way now. There's been several in the past. I'll say Ruffner, but that's a political statement on its own for some strange reason. But so you end up falling into this slot. So when you think about the balance, which is the way I've always voted, the subsistence seat is sort of important. And when people start seeing a track that they feel leans one way or another, you're just naturally going to become a target, right? So that's just kind of the way I see things. But here's where the question lies. The question, attendees at the Board of Fish meetings come in two categories, sort of interested fishermen and interested fishermen that more or less become lobbyists. They've been there 100 years, and they know the game. There's an enormous amount of pressure. And depending on the administration sitting here, how it goes may ultimately determine whether or not you're going to be reappointed, right? So the interest groups have a special slant. The administration typically has a slant. I'm not picking on any particular one. That's just kind of how it goes. And then you have the board member trying to figure out all of these decisions. I know for a fact that not every board member has chosen what they think is right because of all of that pressure. So talk to me about that pressure, just kind of in a collective sense of both the public lobbyists, the administration, and then the sort of overlying interest groups. How do you make decisions that you where you can feel in your heart you've actually taken all the information and made the best information or the best decision possible without all those other things. That is a very real factor in being a Board of Fish member.
So it can be, and it usually is, Senator, through the chair, a very intense environment in those board meetings. I've been through three where we were making very, very difficult decisions, especially. Certainly, I recognize the different interests. But at the end of the day, I'm relying heavily on the data that the department provides. And I do have conversations with managers and department staff, because that is where we need to base our decisions on, largely. Now, I do think that, like I said already, I think that there is a component of local and traditional knowledge that is very important, which is why the work and the participation from the advisory committees is also critical in informing the board's decisions and my decisions as an individual member of that board. So, as I approach sort of how I manage my time, I try to make myself available, definitely in the early parts of the meetings, depending upon how long they last. But generally the night before deliberations, I don't know if sequester myself is quite the right word, but I try not to meet with folks on that evening, because I really want to take the time to look through all of the materials, digest the information anecdotally and otherwise that I've been given, and do my very best to make the best decision that I can with the information I have in front of me. And I fully recognize that not everybody is going to agree with that decision. There are going to be individuals and interest groups that are really unhappy with that. It's part of the job, but that's my approach to it, generally speaking.
Thank you. One brief follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Yeah, thank you for that. I could probably write a paper on the three categories of pressure that I defined, and I hope someday a Board of Fish member does. It's very real, and the public is always watching, and it's not like the perfect deal where you can make everyone equally unhappy. Every decision is going to have one group extremely unhappy and one group less than extremely unhappy. Anyway, question I want to ask. I know department staff members that feel like they do not have the freedom to provide accurate information by the board. It's been squelched by past board members. It's been muzzled by past commissioners. I'm saying past, not pointing at anybody, but it happens. What can the Board of Fish do to make sure that they're actually getting reliable, apolitical department information on making sure that fish are actually first?
Senator, I think that the way that a board member would approach that, or the way I approach it, is if there is an issue that's coming before me that I have a particular interest in, I'm sorry to hear that, department staff feel like they've been muzzled or squelched. That's disturbing. That has not been my experience, but I will also say my experience has been pretty limited, frankly. But I think that the way that you try and work through that is to, ask for information, speak with the managers, throughout the year, if possible, not just in the board environment where, it, you know, that it is under this incredible microscope, and try and get a better, deeper understanding of the work that they do and the challenges of their positions outside of just that board environment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, I don't see other questions. As always, thank you, Merritt, for your willingness to continue to serve and for being here today to answer these questions. Lastly, but not least, we'll hear from John Jensen from Peterburg. Mr. Jensen was reappointed to his second term on July 1st, 2020, and if confirmed, his term will expire June 30th, 2023. Mr. Jensen, if you could please introduce yourself for the record, brief introduction, short background. Why do you want to continue to serve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow Senate resource members. My name is John Jensen of Petersburg, Alaska, and it's an honor to have been reappointed to the Board of Fish by Governor Dunleavy to serve a seventh term, 21 to 24. I have over 50 years of professional mariner experience in Alaska as a commercial fisherman, fishing vessel and permit owner, and hired captain of larger fishing vessels. I have participated in multiple individual commercial fishery gear types and species prosecuted in all coastal regions of Alaska. In operation since 2010, I own a seasonal self-guided recreational skiff rental business and providing boating adventures for sport fishing, hunting, camping, whale watching, and glacier viewing and local exploration. As a lifelong resident of a coastal community, I've experienced all aspects of historical dependence on fisheries resources. This includes personal subsistence, recreational, sport, and commercial fishing. I have been a lifelong commercial fisherman, and this has instilled in me a keen interest in the regulatory process. Through the Board of Fish process, I support all efforts to maintain the customary and traditional lifestyle of for all users in Alaska and to continually strengthen the economic stability of coastal communities and ports call for fishing fleet. My enthusiasm for this work never wavers. The overarching goal is to work to provide sustainable fisheries for all user groups in Alaska. I've had the privilege of serving on the Alaska Board of Fisheries for 19 years. I have an in-depth understanding of the regulatory process for Alaska managed fisheries. As Alaska fisherman, I can contribute well-informed working knowledge of the fishing industry from all around the state. I'm a strong advocate for fair and equitable allocation of the resource between user groups based on the best science available. This process belongs to the people. I've always advised them to come and participate and let their voices be heard. In conclusion, there are significant challenges on the horizon. I'm prepared to and committed to playing a positive role in addressing them while upholding the goals of sustainability, fair allocation, conservation, and the preservation of our lifestyle, economic resilience of our communities for all participants. I would like to thank you for your time, your service to Alaska, and for serious consideration of my reappointment to the board. And I have one other caveat to add to this, Mr. Chair. I recently participated in the decision to close the Easy Waters of the Cook Inlet as a member of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. I have the honor of being a voting member of that council. The issue started when the Commercial Fish Organization filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking more federal oversight of these waters. And the lawsuit was opposed by the state as an intervener in the case. The federal court ordered the council to amend the existing fishery management plan. I happen to be the co-chair of that work group in Cook Inlet with accordance to the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Management Act. Allowing federal oversight of mixed stock fisheries has a real potential to significantly impact fisheries in the state waters because the fisheries under review are first-in-line mixed stock fisheries. This could also potentially result in allocation shifts to already fully allocated fisheries in the Cook Inlet or worse, impact the current management plans designed to protect weaker recovering stocks. And I'm basically quoting off a letter from the state of Alaska to Senator Murkowski, Sullivan, and Congressman Young. And for these reasons, the state cannot support the establishment of a process that requires annual federal and council review and oversight of our salmon fisheries and their management. While the state does not like closing waters to commercial harvests, we saw it as the only option of the three available choices to preserving the state management of mixed stock fisheries in Cook Inlet and ensuing against federal incursion into this and other state-managed fisheries. There is a simple way to fix this problem, and that would be just changing a word in the Magnuson-Stevens Act. It's found in 302H1, and that would be just change the word to federal, and that would solve all the problems. And right now, this decision, or this is hopefully being attended to by our federal legislatures back east, and the won't be closed this year, 2021. But if we don't get the word changed by 2022, that may end up with the EEZ waters closed in the Cook Inlet. EEZ is three and out. State manages three and in, so 3 miles in. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, John. Do we have questions from committee members? All right, we don't have any questions. Well, thank you very much for your willingness to continue to serve and to be here to answer questions and testify today. We appreciate it. And thank you to all the rest of you again for being here. That's our last Board of Fish appointment. So here's what we're going to do. We have about 40 folks online, and we have just over 10 minutes to use the room. We can go just a little bit longer than that, but here's what we're going to do. To everybody online, I sincerely apologize. What I don't want to do is to run everybody very short. I don't want to have to cut people off, and I want folks who want to testify to have the full attention of committee members. So what we're going to do is this. We're going to take the first seven folks online to testify, and the rest of you, we will hold public testimony open until Monday, and the rest of you will please call back in on Monday to testify, and if there are any challenges with that for any of you, please, we'll do our best to accommodate. We're not trying to make this hard on individuals, but trying to make it easier on everybody, so I do apologize for that. But we're going to take, and so I'm going to list who I'm going to take so you guys can be prepared. We're going to take Gilda Saheloff from Anchorage, Alana Hurley, Shag Trent, Catherine Carscollin, Susan Doherty. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Ben Moore, and Barbara Riley. Now, those are the folks who have been waiting online the longest. If I did not call your name, please be prepared to call back in on Monday at 3:30. So we're going to start the testimony with Gilda. Gilda, if you could please put yourself on the record and give us a brief 1 to 2 minutes. Tell us who you are, who you're with, whether you're for or against an individual or all the individuals. Please begin.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gilda Shalapath. I'm originally from False Bass, currently living in Anchorage. And I am not with any particular group. Right now I'm here to support Melvin Smith as the commissioner. We're both from False Bass, and I was involved in local politics and meetings, not just local, regional, and statewide, all the time I lived in the community as an adult. I now am retired and living in Anchorage, but I've known Melvin, you know, all my life, from however you say it, and we're both, like I said, we're both from False Bass, and I know he's been fishing since a child, and he's got a lot of fishery knowledge, so I support him as the commissioner of the CFEC. Thank you.
Thank you, Gilda, and thanks so much for your patience and being here with us to testify. Next, we're going to move on to Alana Hurley. Alana, please put yourself on the record. Who are you with? Who are you for or against? And give us 1 to 2 minutes, please.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Alana Hurley. I'll keep it short and sweet today. I am testifying on behalf of myself. I'm a senator out in Bristol Bay out of Clark's Point, and I'm calling in opposition to the confirmation of Abe Williams today. I believe that his conflict, you know, working for the Pebble Limited Partnership is something that should completely, you know, keep him from being on the Board of Fisheries. The Board of Fisheries' main role is to conserve and develop the fishery resources in our state. And that conflict, you know, it makes no sense to put someone with that type of conflict in a role like this. So I'm calling in opposition of Abe Williams today. And I'll just keep it short and sweet. Thanks.
Thank you, Alana. Next, we're going to move on to Shag Trent. Shag Trent from Bristol Bay. Please put yourself on the record. Who are you with in 1 to 2 minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir. My name is Shag Trent. I'm with Macnic River King Salmon, Alaska. I'd like to say a Pebble employee cannot serve on the board whose task is overseeing state fisheries management without obvious bias. We can't trust Abe Williams to make a sound decision in Bristol Bay, and we should question his approach to other areas of the state where resource development threaten critical fisheries. I urge the legislation to reject the nomination and encourage the governor to find a suitable candidate that has the faith in the fishermen and fulfilling the board's important role in managing their fishery. We cannot trust Abe Williams to put fish to be first. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Shag. Thanks for your time being here to testify today. Next, we're going to move on to Catherine Karskalin. Catherine, please put yourself on the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Rebeck. Thank you, Chair Rebeck and committee members, and I will do my best to keep it to 2 minutes. For the record, my name is Catherine Karskalin, and I'm giving testimony on behalf of myself on the appointment of Mr. Abe Williams. I was born and raised in Dillingham in a commercial and subsistence fishing family, and I continue to make my home and living there with a drift boat I've operated for the past decade. The first ever Board of Fish meeting I participated in was the 2009 Bristol Bay Finfish meeting in Anchorage, and I was there to support Proposal 13, which was a request for habitat protections for Bristol Bay from the proposed Pebble Mine. Thinking back on this hearing 12 years later, it stands out to me that I not only still remembered the proposal number off the top of my head, but that hearing shaped my understanding and respect for the Board of Fish process. The open-mindedness and accessibility of the board members at that meeting made me a believer in participating in this process, and I've attended every Board of Fish, Bristol Bay Board of Fish, since then. I bring this up because the question has been posed whether Mr. Williams' connection to Pebble Mine is relevant to this nomination. I believe that Mr. Williams' decade of work promoting a project which would directly remove essential habitat from our region's fishery is at absolute odds with the guiding principles of the sustainable salmon policy a board member is expected to uphold. Over the past decade, Mr. Williams has consistently misrepresented the views of commercial fishermen, often falsely presenting us as divided on the Pebble issue. He has wasted our fishermen's resources by carrying forward a lawsuit fully funded by Pebble against our fleet-funded RSCA. Although the Board of Fish, like his past Bristol Bay Fisheries Board positions, would not allow him to speak directly on behalf of the organization in support of Pebble, by sheer virtue of wearing both hats, allowing him to serve on the board would give Pebble a leg up and continue to misrepresent support for the mine among our industry. I have no doubt that if my introduction to the Board of Fish put me before a board member with as clear of conflict of interest as Mr. Williams has on this issue, I would have left my first meeting with the assumption that politics has more of a role than public input or science before this board. In conclusion, I believe that is the choice before this committee and the legislature. Governor Dunleavy's appointment of Mr. Williams was a political maneuver in favor of Pebble Mine. That is what this has to do with Pebble and why it's not just an aside, but it's the impetus for his appointment to this board in the first place. To allow that level of politics at play in a board that's so important to Alaska's fisheries would be abdicating the role of checks and balances, which I hope the legislature will play in this process. Please demand a higher standard of Board of Fish nominees and reject this nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Next, we'll move on to Susan Doherty. Susan, put yourself on the record, who you with and who you for or against.
Thank Thank you. My name is Susan Doherty. I'm the executive director for Southeast Alaska Seiners Association, and I live in Ketchikan. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. The Board of Fish was established as an open process to give user groups an equal opportunity and voice to the decisions that affect the fisheries resources and the multitude of users that rely on them or simply enjoy them. The process has been touted as the best in the world, and we believe in large that to be true and hope it continues to be so. The process relies on the commitment and expectation that everyone is heard and has an opportunity at the board's ear. The outcry you are hearing isn't because people are upset that a ruling was made against one group over another. That is what the process does when needed. It's about the expectation, the oath, and the commitment to be unbiased and impartial. People are upset because they experienced, witnessed, or it was clearly demonstrated that they had no real opportunity at the meeting to be a part of the decision-making process and bring their side of the story to the table. They were shut out. Their views had no value. The decision had already been made in this board member's mind. Is the message that was sent loud and clear? The Board of Fish process only works when board members diligently adhere to being open to all users and develop trust with all the user groups. This trust has been violated, and thus you are hearing passionate, angry, frustrated testimony to not confirm Ms. Carlson-Van Dort. The process depends on trust. The process doesn't work without trust, but trust has to be earned, and you are hearing not only was it not earned, but that trust was broken. The people who rely on this process, and even a legislator who was at one of the meetings, are telling you that she violated the trust of her seat. We don't think the importance and the necessity of trust of your constituents is lost on any of you in your role as public servants. And I thank you for your service. Your vote to oppose this confirmation is our only voice. Please hear our cries and restore the trust to the Board of Fish process that is so vitally important to us and our livelihood. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Next, we'll move on to Ben Moore. Ben, please put yourself on the record who you're with, who you're for or against.
Good afternoon, Chair Rivak, Vice Chairman Chickie, and members of the Senate Resources Committee. My name is Ben Moore. I'm the Executive Director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We're a charitable nonprofit organization dedicated to ensuring the sustainability of the world's premier sport fishing region, Alaska. KRSA would like to register our support for the confirmation of each of the governor's appointees before you here today. We believe balance between all user groups provides the best management of Alaska's fisheries, and these five represent a balance between user groups, sport, commercial, and personal, and subsistence or personal use. I've had the opportunity to observe John Jensen, John Wood, and Mark Carlson-Van Dort at board meetings for the last 2 years now, and these nominees have demonstrated an understanding that service on the Board of Fish is a public trust responsibility, and their decisions are answerable to all Alaskans. At the 2020 board meetings, it was common to see multiple stakeholders promoting multiple proposals or amendments, and these board members proved to be accessible to the public, and they provided thoughtful consideration of every perspective brought before them. Chair Carlson-Van Dort's been a welcome presence on the board. Her upbringing in Chignik and Juneau and her background in subsistence and commercial fisheries both inform her decision-making. But they don't provide her with an unfair bias. Her decision-making has indicated a preference for accuracy and precision in management and for ensuring long-term sustainability of our fisheries. And despite the desire from many sectors to show some preference, Chair Carlson-Van Dort has shown that she takes up issues based on their merit and the best available information. I'd also like to mention one of the observations of Mr. Wood from his time on the board. That's his desire for equity and inclusiveness. His hallmark at the Upper Cook Inlet meeting was bringing people together, and he'd always ask people if they've talked to the other affected parties and encourage us to reach agreement. He consistently worked for collaboration to reach the ultimate goal of the Board of Fish, which is to conserve and develop the fisheries resources of our state. And Mr. Jensen has served Alaska with distinction for many years in his role. His experience and knowledge of Alaska's various fisheries is an asset to our state. Regarding Ms. Mitchell and Mr. Williams, Ms. Mitchell brings to the board a fresh perspective that I think is going to serve Alaska well. Her role as an economist with the university will also influence her decision-making, and it's going to help her on the core goal of the board, again, to conserve and develop the fisheries. And finally, Mr. Williams, it's my understanding that Mr. Williams has been an active participant in the Bristol Bay commercial drift fishery for the better part of 30 years and has often been one of the most successful fishermen in the district. His experience with BBRSDA and the local ACs will be invaluable to the board. Again, we applaud the willingness of all the nominees to serve Alaska on the Board of Fish, and we encourage a positive confirmation vote by this committee and by the legislature as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Next, we'll move on to, this will be our last public testimony today. Again, I want to thank everybody for being here to testify and for your patience. We had an aggressive schedule today. We're trying to get through as much as we could, but we will dedicate Monday to public testimony. So please, please be ready to call in for Monday at 3:30. So next we'll go to Barbara Riley. Barbara, please put yourself on the record. Tell us who you're with, who you're for, against, and give us a minute or two.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. My name is Barbara Riley. I'm a 40-year resident of Alaska. I represent myself, and I don't think I'm alone in representing myself. I have a Master's of Science from San Francisco State University, Marine Science, a Master's of from the School of Engineering, Environmental Engineer, University of Alaska. I have 20 years with the United States Army Corps of Engineers dredging all the harbors in Alaska. And as a matter of fact, I'm retired now, the sediment disposal expert for the United States Army Corps of Engineers Alaska District. That's the entire state of Alaska coordinating with Hawaii and D.C. In addition to that, I was the environmental compliance officer for the Army Corps of Engineers for the Alaska District. I've won awards from the Army Corps as Scientist of the Year. I've won awards from the Air Force as Environmental Warrior, and I have medals from the Colonel for my work. I'm calling, and I thank you for the opportunity because I do not find Abe Williams to be a satisfactory or valid person to serve on the Board of Fisheries. Mr. Williams, in giving his personal history, as detailed as it was, happened to leave out all of his pebble mine experience. This shows a lack of transparency and an omission of pertinent truth and fact when questioned. It's an alarming conflict of interest, and Mr. Williams, his regional director of public limited partnership, he's been an advocate, an ardent champion of the Pebble Project for a decade. His nomination is a reflection of Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's work to promote Pebble Mine despite Alaskans' widespread opposition that has been going on for decades. For decades, we have said no. This appointment also reduces rural representation in state fisheries management decisions that is traditionally held by a Bristol Bay resident over an Anchorage resident, and a mining executive does not belong on the State Board of Fisheries. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
All right, thank you, Barbara. Okay, we're going to end public testimony today. We're going to leave public testimony open. But that will be our last testifier of the day. And this one more time, I want to say I do apologize. We still have so many people that need to testify that there's just no way that we're going to be able to get through this today. And so, again, to make sure and be attentive to your testimony and give everybody the attention that testifiers deserve, we want to make sure that that we're able to hear you. So we're going to do that on Monday. Thank you all for your patience with the committee. Thank you all for your flexibility. And again, Monday, April 19th at 2021, we'll start the meeting out with testimony. So we'll look forward to hearing from you all then. All right, it's 5:05 and this meeting is adjourned.